Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Dan McNeil, Danny Parkins.
Oh, here we go!
Afternoons on the Score.
And away we go.
Corner. Bullseye! Fletcher McGee is not human!
There was a little bit of animation here from Coach Tom Izzo. Well, you with freshman Aaron Henry.
Now, there were some things Aaron didn't do a very good job of. I get a kick out of you guys. Get after somebody because you're trying to hold them accountable. I don't know what kind of business you're in, but I'll tell you what, if I was the head of a newspaper and you didn't do your job, you'd be held accountable. It's the way it is.
Iowa's missed six of their last seven and then a shot clock violation.
Odiasi gets it outside. Edwards with a three. Good! What a shot, Kyler Edwards, a freshman from Arlington, Texas.
He's our NCAA tournament insider. He is Simba Eli Hershkovich. Do you still have Auburn in the Final Four? Because I bet on them.
I do.
Okay, good.
I'm rolling with Auburn.
Okay, good.
Hate on Bruce Pearl and the Tigers, guys.
Wow.
Okay, good.
Really?
And it's over!
The pump, the three, good! Here's a three, good! Moretti, three, good! He got another one!
Hey, is Nance calling the game?
Yes.
Can we sub Tony Romo in for coach?
It's Guy for the win! Hold on! Did I hear a whistle?
Wow.
We got a foul call!
Wow.
The Auburn fans thought it was over.
It's a killer.
Guy will be at the line for three. He got all three!
Hudgens!
Virginia is heading to its first ever national championship game appearance.
Oh, my God. If you're going to call it one way, call it the other.
Because it's very unusual.
Man, I really want to cry.
And guard, a 6'3 senior from Wakanda, Illinois.
In a one shining moment.
And Virginia with the all-time turnaround title.
One shining moment.
My dad said if I ever got to the Final Four, he'd come and play Augusta with me, so maybe you can get us on that course, all right?
I'll work on that one.
Yo! Saddle up! Lock and load!
The McNeil and Parkin Show, afternoons 2 to 6 on 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
Like Tanny always says, Tanny's one shining moment's better than the real thing.
No way Jim Nance works on getting that hookup for anybody at Augusta National. I'll work on that. Sure you will.
What a power move,
shoe
though.
Shoe mechanic.
We haven't given enough respect to that power move. Tony Bennett wins the national championship at Virginia, loses as a 16 seed last year, $3 million plus in salary. He got a $1.25 million bonus for a five-year aggregate winning record, and then he got over $1 million in tournament bonuses. So in the last year, this season,
yes,
Tony Bennett's made more than $5 million coaching Virginia basketball. He wins,
yeah,
he wins the national championship. His father, the coach, Dick Bennett, is in the stands and on the podium with Jim Nance, who's about to leave the Final Four in Minneapolis to head to Augusta. He goes, hey, can you get me and my dad on the course?
That's using your opportunity, yeah.
That's a power move, man.
That's, it is. You're right about that. That's
it'll just never work.
Very
well,
creative.
Who's the jerk if he doesn't go? If he doesn't get to go with his dad, who's the jerk? They're going to ask Nance, hey, whatever happened? You ever get Tony out there? He's like, oh, yeah, I'm working on it. Thanks for reminding me,
yeah,
friends.
That'll stick with Nance, just like his $10,000 a month water bill.
Yeah, well, water bill, right? It was a water bill, he said. $10,000.
$10,000.
So he decided, yeah, better not go with grass.
Big backyard.
Too much money, yeah. Very creative on the agent's part, the way he's structuring those bonuses for a coach, too. An aggregate over 5 years. Some agents find the most interesting way to get guys paid, especially at schools that don't have the history. Now, Virginia is not really a great history. It's the first time they've won it in recent years. But you get a school that doesn't flirt with being in a national championship picture in either of the two majors, and an athletic director and a president who will get behind the unthinkable. Like, who in the world is going to get Rutgers ranked in the top 25 for an entire football season? So you tell Greg Schiano, go ahead, okay, we'll give you $50K a week for every week you're, because it never happens. Rutgers hadn't been ranked since the early 70s, and he's got them there every week for a couple straight years. Ching, ching, ching. Brian Harlan, go retire. Ching, ching.
This hour on The Score brought to you by Pontiac RV. This guy's agent made some news on this station, but he's going to have a client who's a free agent this offseason. Joe Maddon was on with Lawrence Holmes today, and it was a good wide-ranging conversation, and here's the best of it, starting with a much-needed, easy, big win yesterday.
Yeah, it was kind of neat to watch the whole thing unfold. I mean, how about how the game, how the whole thing starts with two outs, nobody on, this nondescript ground ball to second base. What does it turn into, six runs? That's how crazy our game is. But I give our guys credit. I mean, the run scored because we weren't good at bats following that, including Zobrist's ground ball that beat the shift. Just up and down the lineup, we've scored a lot of runs because we've been pretty much working good at bats. So that was the tale of yesterday. Johnny getting hurt, of course, no fun, but the bullpen really picked this up. But again, one, two outs, nobody on, routine ground ball to second base leads to six runs.
I was having a conversation with someone last week about Lester and Lester at the plate. And I've always found him to be someone who has a great plan. And I know that, look, he's a pitcher. Pitchers don't hit. And there have been people that have questioned his athleticism. But I see a guy who's big and strong. And if you make a mistake, he can make you pay. So it was fun to see him be able to do that in yesterday's game.
Yeah, when people question his athleticism, I think they're just talking about throwing the first base or not. Otherwise, you cannot question his athleticism. He's got a really rhythmic delivery that he repeats consistently. He could locate all day long. He, like I said, if you watch him on a golf course, watch his golf swing. I've never seen him play basketball or football, but I'm sure he can throw football really well too. John's a great athlete, actually, and he does swing the bat well. When he first came over, everybody's talking about how he had not gotten hit with the Red Sox, and I'm watching the swing, and I'm saying, well, that doesn't make any sense because he's got a really good swing. And then he finally hit a couple line drives, were caught, hits a home run. And in spring training, I had a chance to work with the pitchers a lot offensively and really enjoyed that. And Johnny gets into it. So it's unfortunate, man, running the bases, he gets hurt. But this guy, the one part of his game, obviously, that's not the best is throwing the first base, but everything else he does is outstanding.
What's the latest on his hamstring?
I'm still waiting to hear. I have not heard anything this morning from the medical unit. He's going to, you know, do the MRI thing. We'll find out more at that point. I really don't know. He tried to stay in that game. He was concerned. When I went out there, he said, listen, our bullpen is really low right now. I got to stay in here. So I gave him that one more shot, and I watched him throw, and you could tell that he was very guarded, which is either going to get him hurt or we're going to get hurt because the game's not going to stay as good as it had been. So he came out reluctantly, but it was the right thing to do, and we'll find out more pretty soon.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon joining me here on The Score, as he does every Tuesday at noon. I heard a lot of guys in the clubhouse yesterday talking about Lester's impact. I'd love to know, from a managerial perspective, what type of value does he have to your 25?
Well, when he pitches, we feel really strongly that we're going to win that night. That's you know, pretty much when you get a pitcher of his ilk, that's how you feel every time he takes the mound. And that's so when guys walk in the room, we're pretty confident about that night. Beyond that, Johnny, I've really watched the evolution of John over the last 5 years, 4 years. He's actually really grown up and matured as a Major League Baseball player. I know he was very accomplished by the time we got him, but he's, once David left, he's pretty much been spreading his wings, and I really enjoyed it. John, he and I have great conversations. I bounce things off him all the time. It's just a different version of John Lester, and I think it's reflected in the way he's pitching. He stopped worried about people stealing bases, and the focus is at home plate. And it's been a great result because of that. And beyond that, like I said, just conversationally, I really enjoy my conversations with John, and I know the other players do also. So he's really taken that role within the clubhouse. Sometimes it's overstated, or you know, just because the guy's good, they you consider him a leader. But John is really morphing into that kind of player.
Is that hard for a guy at this point in his career to do that's accomplished as much as he has?
I don't know that it's hard. It just has to be that the person has to be willing to make some changes or adjustments. And part of it is just being more willing to express your opinions. You know, some guys like the safe route. They don't want to put it out there. They don't want to become involved in that. They'd much rather continue to circle the sun in their own method, and they're fine with that. But then there's other guys that realize the importance of getting involved a little bit, and not to the point of being annoying or trying to come across as knowing everything. That's not it at all. I think the best way to describe it is that you're going to, when you walk in the door, you're a little bit more concerned about the other guys than you are about yourself. And that's when a true leader arrives in a clubhouse, in I'm talking about in the baseball sense. So when you get guys like that, they really are upbeat normally daily, and they look for the guy that they can help first before they help themselves. That's a true leader.
If he is on the injured list, what does that do to your rotation?
Well, it makes it look different. We have to figure out how we're going to work it from there. Monty's on the DL right now, so you have to wait on him. I think Tyler Chatwood's been throwing the ball well. And again, I don't even know if the guys upstairs have other thoughts regarding this. First, you just have to determine exactly what you got. Of course, he's going to miss a start. Coming out of the game yesterday, Johnny's going to miss at least one, and it's probably maybe even two starts he may. So you have to start developing Plan B. We'll start developing Plan B, and we have different options.
What things has Tyler Chatwood done that have made you happy?
Well, first of all, I mean, this guy's been so accountable. You can't get better unless you're accountable, and he has been. Coming off of last season, the biggest things that the most significant thing is just the alteration in his delivery. He's really streamlined it to the point. I think that's a big reason why you're seeing more consistent strike throwing. He still might, you know, throw a scud once in a while, but he gets right back in his zone very quickly after that. And believe me, man, his stuff is prime. It's first rate. It's as good as it gets. If we get this guy on a roll, there's no telling what he can do. His pitches move that much. He's on up to 96 right now. He's got a great curveball cutter. He also could drop a changeup in there when it's necessary. His stuff is that good. Don't be deceived by this. We just have to get him more consistently in the zone. And this is beyond that. You talk about a great athlete. This guy could hit. He could run. This might sound weird, but I think he's one of the best at getting off the mound and moving around and actually even covering first base. He's very athletic. So we get him in the zone with his confidence coming up. Anything can happen with Tyler.
Yesterday, I was sitting in the stands. I watched the game from the stands, and I was joking how there's no better place in Chicago for clout than opening day at Wrigley Field. I mean, everyone seemed to be there. You had the current mayor, the soon-to-be mayor. You had Vince Vaughn there, Jeff Garland. I saw you holding court with a couple of people. What's that like, that the feeling of opening day at Wrigley Field?
Well, honestly, I did. I took a snapshot. I did slow it down. I was really good yesterday in that regard. And what is it like? It's like no other. I've been involved in opening days in different parks. I've been an Angel. I've been a Ray. I've actually been involved in opening days at Yankee Stadium and at Fenway, which the old Yankee Stadium, which I consider the real Yankee Stadium. And there's just something different about our method here. It's the fans are so entrenched in the team itself for so many years. And if you're a Cub fan growing up, man, you just absolutely, you're so involved emotionally with that group of players, regardless of who the present group is, the past group that was there, the Hall of Famers. It's just a unique experience. So I slowed it down. I looked at it. You're right. Talking to Jeff and Vince on the field. I met the mayor. She was outstanding. We had a nice little quick conversation. It was a very cool day. And believe me, man, I at home plate, I'm looking around the ballpark. I saw my wife, Jay, sitting off to the side there. And then you look around. I placed my dad in his seat, my uncle Rick in his seat. I placed him in his seat so that they could see the game well. They both passed years ago. But that's my moment on an opening day. And, yes, it was very clear.
And then the offense is able to erupt, and you broke down how Lester was able to help get some of that stuff started. Offensively, your guys have been pretty good. You're seeing Willie be back to what he was a couple of seasons ago. You're seeing Javi be Javi. What's been going on with your offense, and why are they averaging 7 runs a game?
First of all, truth be told, we played in some offensive ballparks. Texas, very offensive. And Milwaukee, my God, is that the moon or is that Colorado? I don't know. But to be in the Midwest and have the ball fly like it did there was unbelievable. Even Ryan O'Sandberg sitting behind me during the one game, and we talked yesterday, and he couldn't believe how hard the ball was hit there. So I think part of it's just natural confidence and hitting, playing in hitters' ballparks. I think that's a part of this. And then beyond that, I just think the approach in general. You've noticed we hit some home runs. We have. But the ball's been going from line to line, and that's the one thing we've been trying to get done for the last couple of years. Schwarber's home run to left field yesterday was almost like a strong right-handed pull hitter, and KB put the ball in the right field corner for extra bases. Yesterday, Rizzo the other day, slicer down the left field line, beautiful. Just think about all the hits in general. A lot of middle opposite gaps have been working. So I think part of it is we've been placed in some really offensive ballparks, which helped build our confidence. And then on top of that, it's been approach.
It's like you're reading from my notes because I wanted to ask you specifically about Schwarber and his tendencies, at least so far, to try and go to left field. Is that something that you wanted him to work specifically on, or is that just something that's happened naturally with his swing?
We've been on this for a couple of years now, and it's one of those things when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. He did a lot of good work in the offseason. And I know you could tell the difference in his setup right now in the batter's box.
He's a little lower.
Yeah, he's a little lower. He's into his legs more, and the technical term would be staying behind the baseball better. He used to, last year or two, more upright, more like a little bit of a tripod, and just his first step, he would step with his front foot and kind of get the weight too much on the front side. Now, if you can imagine, you reach with your stride foot, your front foot, and you stay behind that foot, and all your power stays in place, and that's what he's doing. So I really would hope that he doesn't hit one home run right down the right field line all year. I prefer that his right field foul line would be right center. If you could draw a line from second base to right center and move it from there onto the left field foul line, if he stays in that part of the field all year, he's gonna have a great season.
With KB on Sunday, you had said that look, he's working through some things. What types of things is he working through?
Well, you saw it yesterday, and you probably have noticed he's really trying to stay middle off field, just like I'm talking about. He hit that one hard line drive. He got out in front at the shortstop his first at bat. But the big thing, a lot of times when a guy really wants to find himself, you got to almost try to jam yourself, believe it or not. And when you jam yourself, you're really taking your bottom hand to the ball correctly. And when you're never getting jammed, that's actually not a good thing because you're probably coming around the ball, which really does not permit you to cover the outer reaches of the plate well. So right now, I'm encouraging him to get jammed. Stay in the middle. Hit your bloopers to the right side until you really find the end of the bat with your hands. That's what it comes down to. He needs to find the end of the baseball bat with his hands. That's, for me, it doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. It's almost like it's a pinata. And the bat, you're trying to break the pinata with this stick, this bat. And you do that by utilizing your hands to the point where you hit the pinata with the head of the bat. That's where he's at. That's no more complicated than that, so I've been encouraging him to stay middle off field.
How is Hayward kind of activating his power stroke now?
Well, again, there's another guy that's made some really, and I've been talking to him all spring training, man. He looked really good to me. His hands are different. They're noticeably different to me. You're seeing the ball come off the bat a lot hotter. Those two homers, he had two homers, three homers in Milwaukee, right?
Yep.
Yeah, and the one he hit the best just hooked foul, just a click. But the one in right central, he was channeling his inner Cliff Floyd, and then left center was beautiful. And then the high fly ball to right that he just was able to get to. But his hands, it's all hands. You can't hit the ball like that if you're pushing the bat through the zone. You cannot. It's impossible. In order to hit the baseball like he has, you have to have activated hands, which permits you to operate from your elbows to your fingertips, and that's what you're seeing him do right now.
Joe Maddon joining us for a few minutes here, as he does every Tuesday at noon. It's great to talk baseball and hitting with Joe. What was it like for you? I mean, I have a sense of what it was like for Cub fans over the first week and a half of the season, but what was it like for you to see your bullpen not succeed?
It was like managing in Midland, Texas in 1985 and 1986. My God. It's a helpless feeling. I mean, when you really can't stop the bleeding and everybody's just a little bit off, and just like good hitting becomes contagious or the lack of it, the same thing happens in bullpens. When guys get on a roll, all of a sudden they all get on a roll, and sometimes it happens just the opposite way. And again, we were playing in some real hitters situations. Texas, The wind was blowing out the whole time. It blows in, and that means it's blowing out because really the wind curves off the ball, the structure there. And so the ball in the air, it was really well struck, really fast infield in Texas. My God, AstroTurf's not that fast. So you had all these factors working against them. And again, like I said, Milwaukee was the same thing. So I'm not making excuses for anybody. I'm just telling you what was going on. And I think like yesterday, you saw the great performance for our guys. I have a lot of faith in this group. So when I manage an 85 and 86, if you want to look up some high ERAs, check that stuff out, man. We could not hit enough. You cannot hit enough to outscore the other team.
Yeah, we actually checked the park effects of Arlington versus Coors, and it's more of a offensive ballpark because of that fast infield. I mean, stuff will get through there that doesn't get through any place else, and it can wreak havoc on a pitching staff.
Well, it's confidence. I mean, it's like the shift for left-handed hitters. I mean, everybody wonders about lefties and are not hitting high enough. Well, you go up there and take a good pass and hit the ball really right on the screws, and all of a sudden it's right at somebody because of advanced defenses. The confidence suffers, man. It just does. Whereas if the ball gets through, even if it's a dribbler, I don't care how ugly a hit is. Hitters go up to the plate with more confidence the next time as opposed to hitting an absolute bullet that's caught. It's just the way the baseball world rotates, man. And like you said, Colorado's done a nice job. I mean, that ball, that is zero gravity in Colorado. I actually had power as a hitter when I played there. But they've done a nice job with the ground there. You could actually put the ball on the ground and Colorado will suck it up a little bit. But it's not sucked up at all in Texas. It's otherworldly there.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. Now, I know that you have a lot of affection for Carl Edwards. What things do you want to see him work on down in the minors, and what will get him back to Chicago?
To do simple better, just simplify everything. It's just gotten to the point where he's just trying to do too many different things, and he doesn't need to. This guy almost got the last out in the World Series a couple of years ago, did a really great job at the last part of that game. So he's pitched in some really high-stakes situations. Great stuff. Like he gave a home run up to, Harper in the playoffs a couple of years ago, and everybody was wondering, but I want Carl versus the better left-handed hitters because he's that good. So it's about, again, I use the word confidence. It's about confidence simplification and stop worrying about throwing strikes and you will. I mean, when you get, it's just one of those, it's the paradoxical intent. You try not to, then of course you're going to throw balls. So I want him to just chill, simplify his delivery, become more visceral, primal in what he's doing out there. Stop trying to be so perfect. His ball cuts naturally. It's kind of like a Mariano Rivera pitch. It's that good, or Kenley Jansen. And right now it's not getting that same effect because he's just trying to guide it into the strike zone. Just become more primal. Go get him. Keep it simple. And just believe in yourself.
The McNeil and Parkin Show.
I was listening to the McNeil and Parkin Show.
Afternoons on the Score.
If the Cubs pitching staff turns it around this weekend and has a good week once they get back home next week, it's going to take them at least all of next week and probably the one after that to get out of the whip cellar of Major League Baseball.
Well, last year you were on the beat. You were the best reporter in town on the Tyler Chatwood v. Lucas Giolito walks title race.
It was a great race.
So can you be our whip correspondent this year?
I will, yes. We can get an open for it. We can whip it good.
The whip report.
Whip it.
Whip it real good.
Two strikes on the hitter, Cervelli. The pitch. Swing and a foul. Or did he miss it? He swung and missed. That's strike three. And running over to tag him out is the catcher, Contreras. The inning comes to an end. What a job by Brad Brock. He gets a double play and a strikeout. The Pirates don't score. Now the 2-2 from Brock to Newman. Swing and a miss. Good job by Brock. Another scoreless inning. We go to the bottom of the fourth.
Kinsler sets. Here comes the pitch. Called strike three. Inning over.
Bouncing ball to short. Three ground balls in the inning. 1-2-3. Nice job by Kinsler. We go to the bottom of the sixth inning. 2-1 pitch from Rosario. Bounce weakly back to the mound. Rosario has it. Plants the left foot. Throws him out. Inning over. Eric Gonzalez pinch hitting. Bounces one back to Rosario. He'll glove it. Turn and throw to Victor Caratini playing at first. And the inning comes to an end. We go to the last of the eight. Bouncer toward the middle. Baez has it. Backhand flip to second. They get one. Bodie to first. Dug out by Caratini. What a double play to end the ball game.
The whip came down. That's what happens when you get guys out. Yes, the whip comes down. Very nice. Chris Tannehill, with their effort yesterday in that 10-0 shutout over the Pittsburgh Pirates, Danny. The Cubs are under 2.00 for a season whip.
Oh, wow.
How about it?
It's only down from here.
Yeah, they're still last.
Oh, good.
They're still 30th. 1.90 is your Cubs whip for the season. Yesterday, giving up 7 hits, they walked 3 batters, and they hit a batter. But did you know that hitting a batter does not count against your whip?
Yeah, it's walks, hits, divided by innings pitched.
It's walks and hits per innings pitched, yes. If they included hit by pitch, it would be wahibip. And nobody wants to say that.
No.
But they still should be docked for hitting a batter.
Yeah, it's flawed.
It is flawed.
But I guess they're saying if a guy reaches on an error, they don't want to count it against.
Exactly. But an error is different than plunking a guy.
Agreed.
I submit to make the whip even more lovely than it is, include hit batsmen. Cubs have walked more batters than any staff in baseball. 56 walks to date.
That's not good.
The Cardinals are closing. Tra-la, tra-la, however. However, they've walked 51. Opposing hitters are batting 304 against Cubs pitching. That is last in baseball. So they're last in whip. They're last in walks. They've walked the most. And they're last in batting average against. Oh, and by the way, they've given up a ton of home runs. 20. Most in baseball is the Orioles have given up 25. If you're wondering about the White Sox, not a ton better. They're in the bottom third in whip as well, and this doesn't take into consideration today. The Rays had batting practice today. They beat the Sox 10-5. Sox were 23rd going into the day at 1.51 on the whip. They had the 12th most walks issued in baseball and were only 8 or 9 slots from the worst in batting average against. So hitters were hitting 257 against Sox pitching going into today. So the whip did come down.
So there's so many things here that so many directions I could go with this whip report.
The strangest conversation for sports radio. I love your show, guys.
It's thorough, it's compelling, and rich.
Oh, it's all of those, yeah.
So where do you think, you know, because they've got, 12 consecutive scoreless innings from the bullpen. They had 7 shutout innings from the pen yesterday with 8 strikeouts against just 4 hits. So that's contributing to the whip coming down. My whip correspondent, what do you think is reasonable by May 1st? Where can the Cubs be in whip?
I think by May 1st, you better see that thing at least 2/10 of a whip point reduced. Yeah, and hopefully by the I'm just saying by May 1. Yeah,
yeah, okay.
It doesn't come down overnight.
No,
it takes a while.
I get the same.
You do get the same thing. I'm all for hit batsmen being included in this, though. But then again, it would make for a really ugly acronym, WHIPIP.
We could
WHHBIP, WHIPIP.
We could create our own stat.
Like Guagi?
Correct.
I loved Guagi.
I was gonna say, yeah, get ahead of the curve, you know, out nerd the nerds, come up with our own stat that incorporates the hit by pitch, and then we'll just start, you know, quoting it as if it's fact already, as if it's a relied upon stat. I like that.
Eat your heart out, Joshian.
That's right.
It's our show now. You're coming up.
Drag coefficient.
Yeah, guys, have you ever even seen the whibbip of that ball club?
Come on. Whibbip.
Whibbip. Oh, when Lester leaves in the third yesterday, I'm thinking you have got to be kidding me. You're joking, right? They have a 6-0 lead, and the one guy on the staff you trust to eat innings effectively leaves with a hamstring, and Joe Maddon said earlier today with Lawrence, it's at least one start, probably two.
It felt like as soon as they had something go their way, because yesterday it was almost like they were getting all the comeuppance on all the good luck. Like everything was coming back to them. It was the regression of the mean. Javi Baez hit a ball where he claimed it bounced in front of the plate. I watched
it did, yeah.
I watched the replay 5 times. I couldn't really tell.
I see bouncage.
If he threw the bat at it or not. But either way, that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
That was a totally absurd way to get on base. The Pirates kicked the ball all over the infield. That was not a clean game.
Adam Engel of the Sox did almost the same thing today. He had a chance to be a hero late, batting with the bases loaded, Sox trailing by 3, and he swung at a 58-foot pitch. Maybe he would have had a better chance if he threw the bat as well. But that thing bounced way off the dish, dude. It wasn't anywhere close. Yeah, you're right. I mean, when you're throwing the bat at a ball that's bouncing in or, you know, close to bouncing in and it's dropping, that's your day.
Yeah, so it was weird. So everything seemed to be going their way, including the weather for opening day. And then, of course, Lester gets hurt with the hamstring injury. And I'll be honest, I've been texting with Casper since we started the show today. He was listening, and he did a nice job of making his point and expanding on his idea that Lester is the most indispensable player on the Cubs, which is what he said with Mullin and Haw earlier today.
Is part of it intrinsic value and nothing to do with what's quantifiable? Because that would be a departure for Len.
Not really. It was okay. He respects that part of his game, but he was saying if you lose Bryant or Baez or Rizzo, there's enough position player depth that the offense is still good. Darvish, you don't trust like a ton, right? That's my words, not his. But so then you got to go to a pitcher. There's not a lot of depth for pitching. And so if you lose Lester, who's been their stopper, who is their ace, who they turn to in the big games, if you lost Baez for the season, right, and you lost his 600 plate appearances, you're replacing that with Addison Russell and David Bote and Ian Happ and Ben Zobrist, professional caliber major leaguers.
Correct.
If you lose John Lester for the season, you're replacing it with 30 starts of Tyler Chatwood or Mike Montgomery. His argument was basically, this guy is a consistent rock.
Still only about 18% of your season, though.
Right.
18% of your games.
Correct. But yeah. Basically, the drop
based on
off,
that, yeah, I get it. I understand, and I think it's a good argument.
I thought it was a really good argument.
I still think, I look back to the biggest reason they didn't win last year, and it was because Chris Bryant wasn't healthy. If Chris Bryant were healthy, they wouldn't have had to play 163 games. He didn't have a Chris Bryant-type year, and that's the biggest reason they missed. For
you
me.
Right, I agree with you, especially because they're off. Yeah, I mean, well, I think that their offense would have not broken if they would have had a top 5 or 10 hitter in the game.
That's right.
So that wins them another game. But I also think that if Brandon Morrow was healthy the whole season, or certainly if Yu Darvish was healthy the whole season, they got 8 starts out of a $126 million pitcher. And my thing with Lester is, obviously, any team can stand missing 2 starts from a starter if that's what Lester ends up missing. But just by design of the roster, by payroll, mm-hmm. by age,
mm-hmm.
they should be closer to a point where it's a question of whether or not Lester would get the ball in a playoff series, because Hendricks is clearly ahead of him, because Darvish is clearly ahead of him, because Quintana is, and they're clearly not there.
No, it would take a lot of convincing to get them to pull Lester off of that the top of the mountain. He's their guy.
I agree, but
they trust him so much in those situations,
And they should, and he deserves it, and he's got a career 2.5 ERA in the postseason, so it's well earned that trust. I'm just saying, you look at the age of Hendricks, Darvish, Quintana compared to him. The contract for Darvish, the early extension for Hendricks, hell, it was 2 seasons ago at the end of the year that Lester talked about passing the baton as ace of the staff to Kyle Hendricks. And since then, they've added Yu Darvish. So Lester at 35 years old in year 5 of a 6-year contract, he's supposed to be back end of the rotation guy who's just veteran stabilizer,
mm-hmm. not working out that way.
Opening day stopper who you're relying on for 30 starts and 180 something innings again this season. This segment in the WHIP report brought to you by Goodwill. We'll get it. Every time you shop at Goodwill, you wield the power to put people to work. Every purchase enables Goodwill to help someone develop a resume, learn interview skills, or get a job. You shop, we train, people work. Visit AmazingGoodwill.com for a Goodwill store near you. And bottom of the hour brought to you by Northwestern Football. Don't miss your chance to watch Big Ten football at Ryan Field this fall as the Big Ten West champion Northwestern Wildcats host Ohio State, Michigan State, and more. Season tickets on sale at NUSports.com.
Your last chance, listeners, to hear Chuck Swirsky do Bulls basketball this season tonight right here on The Score as the Bulls wrap up the 82-game card against the Knicks.
And I saw Tom Thayer in the hallway.
Yu Darvish's biggest fan.
Yes. I think he's got maybe not a mea culpa, but we got some things to address with our guy Tom Thayer in this transition coming up on The Score.
Yu Darvish, that's a whole nother subject. I'm really concerned about the pitching. Strope, I'm kind of done with.
You're done with Strope?
Yes. And then Yu Darvish, that's a whole nother subject.
I hear the people talk.
What's up, Tom Thayer?
I do know it's you, Darvish, and not you, Darvish, because I was getting killed on your text message machine after what I was saying.
They were after you for a little while.
But hey, now I know his name. Now pitch better, and everybody will know your name.
That's right.
You know?
You is supposed to pitch tomorrow, right? But there's not going to be baseball tomorrow.
Probably not.
Crappy weather for the next couple of days. It's supposed to be in the 30s. High, I think, of 40 tomorrow. Rain and high winds.
Play the game. You know, I mean, what's the percentage? I mean, it's not like
a football guy to his core.
I know.
It's not like you can cancel it. It's not like you can. You know, if
you can cancel it.
I mean, really, what are the percentages of possibilities of rain near Wrigley Field? I know they can break it down. You know, because I always look at the
meteorologist.
Huh? Yeah. The rain is supposed to start sometime after 10 o'clock in this area tomorrow morning. So. Warm up at least.
Do you resent baseball players for being soft? Just
not at all. Not at all. You know what? I let me tell you the honest truth. When I watch these guys and I watch them swing at the plate or throw pitches, and you think the repetitiveness of that, not only at the plate that we get to see them, is what they're doing behind the scenes and the, you know, the one swing that you took at your first attempt in the major leagues. How many swings before in your life did you take to get to that first swing?
Mm-hmm.
You know, a million, you know, and that torque on your body. And sometimes you read about the injuries or some of the things that are ailing baseball players. You know, the repetitiveness of any sport, male or female, eventually you're going to feel the results of it. And from David Ortiz talking about how painful his feet were at the end of his career to the way you look at some of the pitchers and the abuse they have on their body. Cole Hamill's my new favorite, by the way.
Oh, he's really? Got it. There's a guy he likes.
Love that guy. He's a new leader. I respect John Lester, but I like Cole Hamill.
You're awesome. We're going to just do baseball the rest of the summer with you, Thayer.
Call number 15 on the scores contest line, 312-591-6700. You win a pair of tickets to see Adam Sandler at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater on June 1st, 312-591-6700.
We got any Patrick Scales maybe tonight? He's got a new contract. You know what? I'm always going to stick up for the snapper.
I know you will. Yes.
No, Scales tonight?
No, we have Mike Davis, the newly signed running back.
That's good.
Who's interesting. He's got a big obligation now. They got rid of Jordan Howard. They believe that he's going to be able to take his skills to another level in terms of attempts. Yeah, he's got the traits to be able to do everything, but now when you're relied upon for 20-something, 30 touches a game, where do you go with that?
20 or 30 touches a game?
A running back in the Matt Nagy system gets 20 a game.
Okay, then, all right, 15 to 21.
Yeah, what used to be 20? That's the new 15.
Right. But again, it's about being available for 16 games.
Right.
You know, that's where the test will be.
What do they have? One guy averaged 20 carries last year, only Gurley?
I think
Gurley was the only guy to average more than 20 carries a game.
And I think he might have finished at like 19 point something.
Yeah, he might not have even gotten there.
Yeah, but it's a new day. It's the passing league.
Yeah, you know,
it's like a baseball player league.
We were out in the hallway talking about Roger Craig when he had the 1,000 season. You know, what would his record, you know, would it be 1,500 now if you had a guy like that back in the 80s have that type of statistical support?
Yeah, Alvin Kamara before there was Alvin Kamara. Right. Texter saying, Cubs meatball Thayer is just the best. Keep it coming.
This transition brought to you by Northwestern Football. Join the Big Ten West Division champion Northwestern Wildcats at Ryan Field this fall. Matchups include Ohio State and Iowa. Season tickets on sale now at NUSports.com. Thank you to Fergie Jenkins. The Hall of Famer was in studio today at 3 o'clock. Hub Arkish called Aaron Rodgers a tool. If you missed that at 4 o'clock, you could check out podcast. Also, if you missed Joe Madden with Lawrence Holmes earlier today, that's on the podcast page as well. Nick Shepkowski, our executive producer. Chris Tannehill, fantastic work as always. His one shining moment at the top of 2 and 5 o'clock today. Tom Theron, Bears All Access coming up next. He's Dan McNeil. I'm Danny Parkins. That makes us McNeil and Parkins. This is The Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.